me Mike Harris. He couldn't make it, so I'm going to be giving this. And then when we get through this presentation, we're going to give you the opportunity to ask questions, but we're also going to ask you for your opinions and your ideas. So none of us have any relationships to disclose. The purpose of this presentation is to describe the benefits of integrating information security and technology into planning early on in preparing the environment for the use of EHRs. Too often, the IT and security are thought of as after the fact, and it's kind of like if you have a house and you build the house and you think, oops, I wanted some security, well, or I wanted external lights, and all of a sudden, it's already enclosed, and it's harder to add it, and it becomes more expensive. So the more thinking you can do up front, the easier it is to integrate it, and the more secure it's going to be. Our second purpose is to demonstrate how to transform high-level security and privacy mandates into operational best practices that reinforce secure data transfers of protected health information and communications between EHRs and registries. We have some ambitious objectives to describe how and when to insert information security and privacy into projects, discuss how to translate high-level security principles to operational use, identify internet sources for best practice security guidance, and explain how to distill information and best practice security guides down to usable security methods and recommendations. And the early birds, I handed out a two-page handout. For those of you who came in later, we still have some copies up here at the front that you can pick up on the way out. So the best approach to this is include your security at the onset, because it really is much more difficult to add security after the fact. And there are several IT tips to remember. Compliance and regulation security pushes downwards, and then privacy of and for the individual pushes upwards. And users, customers, and patients, they're going to be pushing too. So the technical depth of detail is going to get stuck in the middle. And what you want to make sure is that there's enough space for it, you know, that it doesn't get squashed and ooze out the sides. So that's what we're trying to do by working with Mike Harris and other members of the IT security team. And on the handout, all of the sources for good guidance are listed, the URLs for these sources. So we started, before we actually started this project, as one of my previous colleagues mentioned, the School of Medicine was going to be required to have audits of all their software, and several departments leaped away. We jumped forward because we really wanted to know, and we really like to be in the vanguard, in the forefront, and we thought we could benefit from this. So we asked, hey, we are the guinea pigs. Come on over. And that was 4 or 5 years ago. And so we have developed a really good relationship with the IT security team. So anytime we have questions or concerns, they will happily answer them. Anytime they have something that they want to test, they come to us. So we feel that we've created a really win-win situation. So the first thing they did was they reviewed and analyzed our current information infrastructure, and they conducted audits of existing software. And as Iris mentioned, they started with the most vulnerable. How many of you are familiar with CDC's Registry Plus suite of products? Okay, well, not many. CDC, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, National Program of Cancer Registries, developed, and it was tested in Pennsylvania, originally the CRS Plus, that is the Central Registry main database. And then there are a number of other products, the Web Plus, which is for uploading of data and files, downloading, pushing it out, information out to reporting facilities, Abstract Plus, which is a standalone software that can be used at the Central Registry for abstracting these cases that come in as hospital record copies, or can be used by small hospitals that have a registrar but are not COC affiliated, so they just send in minimal data. Link Plus, which helps in linking with other databases, EMARC Plus, which is the software that we are going to be using with EHRs. Have I left out?
Well, EMARC is also going to be integrated. We use it currently right now for our electronic pathology reports. The physician office reporting is going to be integrated with that in that same product.
Okay, so the IT security team determined that WebPlus was the most vulnerable, and they identified, I think it was five critical and quite a number of medium-level vulnerabilities. We thought we would have to have a conference call with CDC, with the programmers of the Registry Plus products to discuss this, because you know sometimes people don't want to hear that their software has a vulnerability. But instead, when we sent the report, and it took 52 hours to run this report off to CDC, we didn't have any calls. They just corrected the critical deficiencies immediately and half of the medium ones, and then asked us to run another audit, see if those fixes worked, and if they did, they would correct the remaining ones. It did, they did, and then we went on to audit all of our other software. And we developed several strategic steps to prepare the environment for new use. We selected secure messaging transfer software. We identified areas that needed improvement to meet increased data and information flow. And I can't emphasize enough, you've got to be prepared for this increase in information. You've got to be prepared to know what you're going to do with the data, where you're going to store it. And this isn't a one-way street. We are a very service-oriented registry. We've had a statute since 1999 that requires physician offices to report if the case isn't being reported by another facility. But we haven't gone after the docs that haven't reported because we take on one group at a time. We started with nursing homes because if you don't die in a hospital, where do you die? In a nursing home. And so from the time, our registry is an old one, established in 72, mandated by the state in 84, limped along until we got funding from CDC in 95. So 96 is our reference year. We separated out our old data from our new data, and we said, we're only going to allow good data in our new database. We may not be complete, we may not be timely, but we're going to have quality, because if you have bad data to start with, you're going to have bad data forever. We can improve on completeness, we can improve on timeliness, but we've got to get the quality right from the get-go. And that's what we did. So it took us a number of years to integrate the two databases, our old database, and we only imported those data elements that we considered critical and that we had some control over the quality. So patient demographics, site and histology. We didn't import treatment because we didn't think the quality was good enough. So getting back on track here, from the IT security perspective, systems need to be segregated into cores. And that means that MCR data should be separated from the internal hospital EHR data, which should be separated from radiology, etc. We maintain four servers. Three are virtual servers, and one is a physical server. Now, what are the cores? Well, virtual firewall protected VLANs, they have unique subnetworks that may be by clinical or business process, by vendor, by defined user community, and you isolate the services from client computers, allow only intended traffic types bidirectionally, limit inbound external access and risk, and isolate and protect databases and stores of electronic protected health information. I don't know how well you can see this, but this is a schematic of a network segregation of these cores, where you'll have the border firewall, you'll have a core firewall, core firewall, and core network for EPHI systems, and you'll have your workstations, your trusted wired 802.1x, and your wireless, and untrusted wireless. So all of these, and then here, out here in the, is the cloud internet. So you have to be aware of all of these differences and what it takes to maintain the security for each. And I could go into a long, we got, the University of Missouri got blackballed a couple of weeks ago because 5 million pieces of spam were sent out. And 76 student computers were involved, 82 faculty and staff computers were involved. We have 35,000 students, and we have, if you count all of the graduate student assistants and all of the staff and all of the faculty, that doesn't add up to half of 35,000. And of the faculty, staff, computers that were involved, the majority of them were faculty. Faculty, well, there's a couple of reasons. This is just a little digression. Faculty can be difficult to convince that they need to follow the rules sometimes. And it's easy to guess what our user ID is because most of us have last name, first initial, and either health.missouri.edu or missouri.edu. And so it's pretty easy to, if you have a list of faculty, to guess the ID. And, you know, some people don't have really strong. We have minimum standards for passwords. In the School of Medicine, we're required to change our password more frequently than campus is, which is a good thing. But we need to do a better job. Students have a combination of letters and numbers, and they're randomly assigned. So it's more difficult to get a student, to guess a student ID. And we find that a lot of the students just use their university ID to get the messages like bills and things because they give their parents access. And they use their Yahoo or their AOL account for other things. So they weren't using their computers as much. Anyway, we are really fortunate at the Cancer Registry that we have really good firewalls, we have really good security procedures, and apart from someone who tried to hack into us about 5 years ago at 3 a.m., and there was immediate notification to our database manager, they didn't get in, we have not yet been hacked and we have not yet had a security breach. We work hard not to, but we can't control everything. After we'd had these vulnerabilities electronically identified, we recognized that we also needed to look at our paper practices and our physical premises. Now, the and we have a little security mouse that we left around. If someone left their office door unlocked and paper was out, it would be locked behind them. And if they hadn't taken their keys, they couldn't get back in. And we sometimes left this little mouse around to remind people that, hey, you've been caught. On the physical premises, we had a homecoming game and we lost. And a size 11 boots hit our door. We think that it was just a drunken, unhappy person that wandered into onto our floor by mistake because the outside door had been left open. Didn't get in, but that made us have the police, MU police, over to do a security audit of our premises and led us to move all into one quarter. So we have all of our data, all of our computers that had any data on it, all of our workstations, except for one that's a training station with no data, in one corridor that doesn't have a stairwell. And even the janitors don't have keys to our offices. We have to do our own cleaning because we don't allow anybody in. And we annually sign 3 different confidentiality security forms to make sure that we remember exactly what it is that we're supposed to be doing and protecting. We created a security officer, Iris, and a security team that holds regular meetings. We are still developing our policies and procedures. Every time we think we've got them done, we make some revision. Now, going back to Mike's side, to the IT security side, don't forget the industry basics. We follow a system lifestyle model. You plan, then you do it, then you check it, and then you act. And you don't do it just once. You have ongoing assessments yearly. We need to manage change. We need to plan for it in advance. We need it to make it part of our operational cycle. Finally, the communication between key stakeholders and technical implementation staff from the onset has been critical to our success. It assured that we have a secure system design and secure messaging and data transfer between point of care, clinical staff, and multiple locations. And this facilitated data aggregation from the EHR sources and permitted encrypted data submission to authorized recipients. We are still in the pilot stages of this, but we are sure that we have the framework to move forward. We just need the money. And a requirement is to have the necessary information technology in place and create an environment that can support various applications needed to demonstrate meaningful use. And I'll just give you one illustration. We have two different software systems that share one server. And recently we upgraded one. And when the upgrade went in, the other system was operating on a different
version,
and it crashed the second one. So we had to roll back the first one, and we are still waiting. And it turned out that there was a little minor bug in that one, and they are fixing it. But that is something that can happen, and you always have to plan for the unexpected, because nothing ever goes exactly like you thought it would. Relationships matter. We're stronger because we have a strong and open relationship with our vendors, with our reporting facilities. As I said, we did this in a stepwise version. We started with the nursing homes, then we went to the PATH labs, and then freestanding radiation treatment centers. We still have been very successful with chemos, and now we got the dermatologists to report because a colleague in the same department that we are, she's chair of dermatology, but she's also has an adjunct appointment in health management and informatics, was president of the State Dermatological Association. So she helped us bring the dermatologist on board several years ago because she was able to convince the, docs like to talk to other docs, and to make them see what an advantage it is to be reporting. And if you look at our data, you can see in the blocks of time, here is what the melanoma skin cancer rate was before we had the expanded reporting law. Here is what it was after we had the expanded law, which is a little higher, and here it was after dermatologists began reporting. And here, there's a statistically significant difference in the increased reporting. So when you can make it meaningful and useful, then you get more buy-in. We've worked with the vendors. Not on the EHR project. We will be doing this on the EHR project. We ask them whenever there's an update, an upgrade, to send test cases so that that helps them because they send that before they distribute the software to the different reporting facilities. So if we find some error, then they can make that correction on one copy instead of having to do it for, five different facilities or 25 different facilities. I like this dedicated local hand-holding support. You can see I rely on people for technology. We work together, and each of us has an area of expertise. Each of us knows a little bit about something else, but we work as a team, and we work across lines. When we came in, we said there was almost open warfare between the hospitals and reporting facilities. And there had been an attitude, well, there's a state law, it's our way or the highway. And we said, well, yes, but that's not the best reason to report. We're in this together for better patient outcomes. And that is the philosophy that we have followed throughout. So we have never gone after a physician just because he hasn't reported. We communicate with the physicians as we are able, as we did with other facilities, say, okay, this is what we're trying to do, this is how we think it will benefit you, and this is what it will require from you, and this is what we will do. And by working together, we are a better team and we have better data. include your techies. Don't banish them. And, you know, when you're talking about plans that you don't think is necessarily they're going to be involved in, but they may have a critical piece of information that if you don't tell them about your plans, you get too far down the road. And it's back to that, oops, it's going to be harder to do it now than it would have been if you did it at first. And don't hide behind layers of management. We are a team. I may be the director, but I don't have as much knowledge about any technical aspect or technology as these two people do. I don't know as much as our CTRs do. I try to hire the very best people that I can find for the job that is to be done, and then let them teach me what they know, so that together we grow and we promote from within. We give opportunities. If we can't raise salaries, well, then we will find a way to send people to conferences or to get extra training. So we have very low staff turnover. And staff turnover is what really kills a registry, because you can have the you can have the theoretical knowledge, but it's that practical hands-on experience that differs from one location to another. Then behind the scenes, you've got to know your environment, your users, and yourself. Don't ever lie to yourself. Don't ever say, oh, I can do that, or I know that, if you really don't. Understand how your systems communicate with each other. Develop planned, isolated infrastructure so you don't get bleed over and crossover. Establish cores, those groups of systems with similar goals and similar user groups. And ensure that you have a robust network infrastructure. Have well-defined borders, source destination protocol, three, but if you have two that are good, that's okay. Plan for the unexpected exceptions, because they're always going to show up. Audit, verify, and make sure, and then do it all over again the next year. Watch and listen for the weird and unexpected. And thank you all for being so patient and sitting through four presentations. Now, surely someone has a question about something. Okay, Betsy, from the NASER perspective, I'll call on the people I know.
Well, what are your recommendations for other states wanting to do this? How do we make it easier for others?
My recommendation is for CDC and PCR to realize that it's going to cost money, and instead of cutting funding, they are going to need to increase funding. My recommendation is that if you're expected to do this at the end of 5 years, you'd better be listening to what we're finding out now, because it's going to take a long time to develop the infrastructure. If you, it doesn't happen overnight. It's expensive to start up. In the long run, we are going to have more complete data. We are going to capture those missed cases. But it's, in the short term, it is expensive and time-consuming and trial and error. Okay.
You need to plan ahead. That's, I think, the main call.
Yeah. You can't do things at the last minute and expect that it's going to happen. Library of Medicine.
It's a very thoughtful and very stepwise implementation of something that's incredibly complicated. And yet, the way you're describing it, you are describing, you sound like an N of one. And I guess that maybe it's a follow-up on the first question, which was really, to what extent are there others who are grappling with these same issues, and some of the decisions that you're making about the software that you're adopting, or the approaches that you're taking about integrating security into your decision making about data mergers and things. I mean, to what extent are you really truly on your own in coming to these conclusions, or to what extent are you getting some kind of guidance or collaborating or coordinating with other cancer registries?
Well, I can give you, we work on several work groups that are national, so we're not, I mean, we do have solutions that we're having to come up with because of our time frame on our own, but we are also collaborating with national work groups that are just starting the five-year cycle, and how do we implement it? Where do we start? Do we start with the CPOs? How do we find out which ones have been implemented? So some of the background that we've done already, some of the, you know, footwork we've already done, we're passing that on, but we still let them know that we're still working toward it as well, and we're trying to find the best solution that can be standardized. Because if you can do it over multiple states, it's much easier than state-specific. And a lot of the EHR vendors are national. You know, you don't want to go to a vendor and say, oh, well, I'm from Indiana, and I need it this way and this way and this way, after Missouri's already said this is kind of a standard. You know, something like that. We're trying not to make it just about Missouri, because we want to benefit the whole entire program, the NPCR program states.
If vendors have said, oh, yes, I'll give you one example of race. We have another special project to improve the quality of data on race and ethnicity. And in stage one of meaningful use, vendors were supposed to have to comply with OMB guidelines. But the test was put together rather hastily. So a vendor could be certified for meaningful use and have Hispanic under race as long as the option for Hispanic was under ethnicity. A vendor could be certified if the vendor had African American under ethnicity, as long as it was also under race. And that's going to cause real confusion if that goes through that way. And they were supposed to comply with OMB guidelines where you have multiple races. Now, you know, we have a multiracial president, we have people in public office who are multiracial, but you could be certified for meaningful use as long as you have white, black or African American, Asian Pacific Islander, Native American, and other for one field, not multiple fields. And so when the vendor said to us, well, oh yeah, we can do that, we'll just add a state out of field, we said, no. We're a demonstration project. We don't want it in a state added field. In cancer, we collect five, we have race one through race five as major headings, and we want this standardized so you don't have to do it differently for Missouri or for some other state.
Did that answer your question?
Oh, and then let me get back. There's one other point of it. There's one other point, and that is we are pretty much agreed on many things. One thing that we do have a split on is, do you bring these physician office cases directly into your main database, or do you put them in a holding database? If you are a small registry and you're not going to have many cases, you may be able to bring them directly into your main database. If you are a big registry and have lots of cases, but you have lots of resources, you may be able to do the same thing. We are a medium-sized, you know, we're not tiny like Alaska, we're not large like Texas, California, Florida, or New York. We've got a lot of technical expertise, but we do not have a lot of staff. So for us, at the moment, there is no option of bringing this in directly. If we do the streaming of multiple that are triggered so that we end up with multiples from the same physician office, we cannot handle it. So I don't know that there ever will be a one-time-fits-all solution to that. But we try to, when we're doing our pilot, we try to think of the greater good. You know, we don't try to think just, well, Missouri. We try to think, okay, what are the circumstances? How could this work? How could that work? And that's why we're going along with the physician, the urologist, and letting him trigger it. Because it may not be feasible in the near future for every registry to have all of these streaming in real time live. And do we need it? Because these are coming from clinics and physician offices, not from hospitals. It's having all of that data is a little like having the tail wag the dog, because for the near future, the majority of cases are still going to come from your large reporting hospitals. And ours, we estimate that 85-90% of our 30,000 cases a year come in from a large hospital. They may also be reported by another source, but they come in from a hospital that is ACOS, COC facility, with certified tumor registrars doing the reporting. Next comment or question? Yes.
I had a question. Do you know how many of the diagnosed cases actually get reported to the registry?
How many of our diagnosed cases are actually reported? In order to be certified as a gold certified registered by NACER and to meet NPCR program standards, we must have at least 95% of all expected cases. We have been gold certified for quite a number of years, 96, 97, 98%. And unlike death, where death data may not be updated, every year, we may, through audits, through death, the death clearance and follow-back process, through linkages with, we have case-sharing agreements with 19 states, our 8 border states, and 11 others. Every year, our entire database may be updated. So we may get a case through death clearance that was originally diagnosed in 1998, but it's just being reported this year because either it wasn't reportable at the time or it was a missed case. So that's the long answer, but somewhere between 95 and 100%. We know we have bias. We know that we're getting most cases, but there's bias in the cases we aren't getting because those are the ones that are seen outside a hospital setting. So it's going to be the melanomas, the prostates, the leukemias and lymphomas, and some breast and colorectal.
But extremely likely in comparison to other diseases.
Right, because very few,
in a way,
there's registered. Right.
Really lucky.
Because it's.
Us in TV or even in other reportable, we have nothing close to
that. That's right. And some are trying to reinvent the wheel. Instead of consulting with cancer registries, which have a long history, they're trying to set up registries from scratch, and they're not consulting the experts. And we really are the experts on how to set up a registry. In addition to being involved with stage 2 of meaningful use, a couple of us from our registry are sitting on the sprint stage 3, and that is one of the things that they're talking about, and we're talking about what is going to be core for all public health surveillance and what is going to be modular that's only needed by cancer or is only needed by TB or HIV. And it is very challenging. It's very expensive to set up a registry and to maintain a high-quality registry. But it can be done. We have done it. And the value of having a population-based registry cannot be underestimated, because how can you really plan? How can you divvy up your scarce resources if you don't have a really good idea of what the trends are? If we're trying to reduce, as in public health we always are, the burden of disease on specific populations, we need to be able to look at the lowest level that's feasible, county or even sub-county. Do we have a higher incidence of a particular type of cancer among a particular age group or race? Or do we have later diagnosis? Because, for example, breast cancer, diagnosed in situ or locally, you're up not 100%, but you're getting close. But the later the stage of diagnosis, the more morbidity and mortality you'll have. It's even truer of colorectal cancer. The survival for stage 4 colorectal cancer is extremely low. So we need this population-based data to allocate our scarce resources, to plan, and to evaluate programs. Do we have any other questions? We still have 10 minutes here, and we have a couple of people who sat here through all of this and haven't said a word.
I had a question.
Okay.
About matching.
Yes.
You didn't talk about matching. What kind of matching do you do?
Matching in terms of like.
Multiple reports of the same case. How do you do that?
Case consolidation and linking.
Oh, case. Well, we do linkages when we do death clearance. For example, we do matching, and we use LinkPlus, and we
another free software from CDC.
Yes, and we set up our own, well, the program is very intuitive, but we set up our own standards for linking our database manager. Sava Yamale does that.
It's a probabilistic linkage that requires manual review at the end for some, if it's not an exact match.
The consolidation for cancer, for our cancer cases, is done through our main, through the software, CRS Plus, through the main database software. And basically, the linkage, when if two records come in, it there's a
it's matched on the patient and
then tumor data first, well, demographic data, the name, the birth date, and and then on the and tumor itself, site histology, and then we have the records, well, the records that match, and then the records that are, that don't match require manual review. So. Is that what you were asking?
We don't know if it's incorporated
in our software, if that's what you asked.
So basically, a case, we have a case, Sally Smith, left breast cancer, and a new another hospital reports that case. So when it comes in, the software will say, hey, Sally Smith, is it the same Sally Smith? Is it a different Sally Smith? If it's the same Sally Smith, is it the same primary or a different primary? Now, when we're getting to the EHRs, and we know, because it's coming from the same physician, we're pretty sure it's the same Sally Smith and the same left breast, but we're still going to have to consolidate those and look at those and see what's the same and what's different. Now, because they're coming in from physician offices, some of these are going to be cases that are not in our database, and some of them are likely to be cases that end up in our database. So that was what they were referring to when they said about timing. How long do you hold a physician office case waiting and thinking that that same case may come in from a hospital before you move it in to the main database? The reason that we would hold it a little longer and another registry might not is because we have limited number of CTRs in our QA. And so if we think it may come in, we don't want to do unnecessary work. We will hold it, we will identify what parts we need to bring in, may consolidate the record, may bring the whole thing in and append it to the record, or if we think it's not coming in, we'll hold it for a while, then we'll bring it in and it becomes the main record. But we always keep, we have two levels we deal with, abstract level, which is what came in, and then the consolidated case. So even if we only have it from one facility, then that one record from one facility will become the consolidated case.
Are you asking for because of duplicates, or are you asking just for consolidation?
No, I just wanted to tell you now, we're with AW registries, we don't have abstracted stuff, we don't have this pre-processed data, we deal with OSINT, which you call the big data library.
Right, so Link Plus is actually a software that can handle any files that are like that need to be linked or like.
I just wanted to know what you guys
use. What are you using?
It's a purpose for
Okay.
Yeah, we used to use a commercial.
Yes, we use AutoMatch.
AutoMatch, and it because we had owned it before, in the past we were able to get upgrades at a reasonable cost, but it became very, very expensive. Yeah. Well, I really thank you all for being such an attentive audience, and I hope that you've learned something from us today, and I appreciate your staying here till the bitter end, and I particularly appreciate people who let me give thanks to Dr. Diane Adams, the founding mother of the HIT section, because she is the person who authorized this special section, and we wouldn't have a HIT section without her. And I also want to recognize that it's really hard sometimes to think about topics like this when we have such a disaster occurring, and we know that we have people here who can't get home in a timely manner because of the flights being canceled and damage to their property. So you all who are or know someone who has been in harm's way, we appreciate and we think of you. Thank you very much.